Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Friday Food Fight. My name is Wes Christian, CEO of Food Handler Solutions, and I am joined once again by Bart Christian, nationally recognized speaker, and a very special guest. And we've got a really cool topic this week that I'm really excited to talk about in regard to virtual conferences. But Bart, why don't you introduce our special guest so we can dive into this one?
We also have nationally acclaimed speaker Craig Wydell with us. And Craig has spoken on stages all over the country. And, you know, a little background on Craig is that, you know, Craig, I know that you've been in the business for 33 years working in child nutrition. That's your heart. That's your passion. You know, right now you are currently serving as executive director for the School Nutrition Association of Arizona after you retired from Mesa School District. And I, you know, one of the relationship is that when I moved to Arizona 20 years ago, I didn't know anybody. I didn't know a soul, but I knew that School Nutrition Association at that time, School Food Service Association was the way to go if you wanted to look, meet people and learn about the association. And it still is to this day one of the best. That they had after I moved to Arizona. Craig Wydell was the president at that time. And I walked up to Craig and I remember almost exactly what I said to him. I said, Craig, you don't know me from Adam, but I want a job. I want to serve. I want to be helpful. And Craig immediately made me the exhibition chair for the next year's conference, which I had no idea what you were doing to me when you did that to me, Craig. Craig, I know at SNAS now, which we held the distinction of being the first state association to hold its conference nationally. And, you know, that's going to be what we're going to talk about today. And we're going to talk about also your passion. I know that you've written a book called My Heroes a couple of times, actually. And you've been a champion of child nutrition for the end. And I think a lot of people know that you've not only served at multiple state levels as treasurer and committee chairs in Arizona, but you've also served at the national level as Western Regional Director and on the public and as a public policy legislative chair. I mean, you've kind of done it all when it comes to the School Nutrition Association.
Well, I've had what I consider a very blessed career in child nutrition. And I was very blessed to have mentors that have guided me over the years, and probably most especially here in Arizona, a lady by the name of Paula Barletta, who is no longer with us, but I mean, she was a champion for child nutrition. She encouraged me to run for office. And kind of as a side note, I actually finished my college degree because of SNA, because at the time, and even currently too, to serve on the board of directors, you have to have an undergraduate degree, and I hadn't finished my undergraduate degree. Education, but so to be able to be the West Region Director and also PBL Chair. So, yep, been very blessed.
Well, to kind of jump into today's topic, which I'm really anxious to talk about because this is right up my level of interest. I love technology and I love the growing trends that we're seeing today with virtual meetings and virtual conferences. And it's my understanding that at the School Nutrition Association of Arizona, you guys just held what might be the first in the nation virtual state conference. And so I'd love for everyone out there to just hear a little bit about maybe some of the obstacles you meet.
Sure, Wes, thanks. I think, you know, we talk about obstacles and maybe pitfalls in terms of our conference planning committee. Our conference, our annual state conference is held in September. So we had actually just started planning our conference in late March of 2020, kind of right on the onset of the whole COVID thing. So we didn't really know what to expect. So for us, that was probably the biggest challenge. The second pitfall that we soon discovered was, oh my gosh, we've got contractual obligations with the conference hotel in downtown Phoenix, and also the Phoenix Invention Center, where we hold our second day events. So we had to figure out how best actually take advantage of what they call the force majeure clause. And that kind of talks about cancellations to acts of God or natural disasters and those types of things. Kind of the downside of the force majeure contracts is that a portion of a contract is that they usually don't take effect until 90 to 120 days before prior to the event. Kind of get out of contracts per se is the to be able to have what they call cancellation insurance. And we never did that, but I know some of the other associations throughout the United States had those cancellation clauses in contracts, and it was a separate rider that they held. And I know SNA had it because they canceled their national leadership right. conference, which was actually in 2020 supposed to be held here in Tempe, Arizona. So that's the other way. But now, because all these insurance companies that had those riders had to pay out so much money for associations all across the United States, not only in child nutrition, but all the other events, that now you can't buy a rider for a cancellation agreement. So that was, you know, kind of the biggest things that we faced, per se, on the onset, some of the pitfalls for us. And then the other thing, if you can't get out of contract, is that they're going to still hold you liable. So for our two
What kind of suggestions would you have that, you know, to other conferences or state associations across the country that are looking at planning virtual meetings? Because, you know, traditionally these types of meetings would happen in person. You sit around in a conference room, sit around a table. So
the little thing called Zoom, which at the time back in March, many of us had never been involved with. So luckily within our conference planning committee, we had some gurus kind of like Wes involved that were able to kind of guide us through that first process and our first meetings with Zoom. What we found now with Zoom, even though everybody hates Zoom because they're on so many Zoom calls throughout the week, that's how we conduct business. It was kind of cool because now people didn't have to drive to one location, the office or at home. So that was kind of a good thing for us. As far as our mindset moving forward with our conference planning committee, we kind of use what I like to call an adaptable mindset. And I guess how you best plan for the future when you have no clue what it's going to look like. And I think that if 2020 has taught us anything, it's that even the best laid plans can go wrong or awry. And kind of the three strategies behind that adaptable mindset is that, number one, you need to focus on what you can control. So that kind of starts us on the path. Well, what can we do? What can we plan? What can we control? Secondly, was how to commit to actions over the outcomes. There were so many what if situations. Well, what if this happens? What if that happens? Because we'd never put on a virtual conference before. And then lastly was kind of to be able to think through what are the worst case scenarios. What's the worst thing that can happen? And you know, sometimes it's good to go first, and sometimes it's not to go first. For us, I think it was a good thing because nobody else had really done this, so it was new not only to our school people involved with the association, but also our industry members alike. So nobody really knew what to expect. So, you know, that's kind of the mindset that we use as we progress forward with our plans. Hmm.
And as far as future meetings and I guess, you know, kind of towards after COVID, does this type of meeting, this virtual meeting, affect the association's business model in any way?
For the business model, you know, absolutely. And I think I can not only speak for myself, but I also belong to a group of colleagues, the actually other state United States, like myself. And we actually met in August virtually. But the biggest thing was loss of operating capital revenue in terms of the association business model. And how are you going to be able to state development conference, and that usually takes place in February, and that is targeted just for our school attendees for professional development. And we usually either break even or make a little bit of money on that, maybe $2,500. And then our third event and our final event is our school nutrition industry conference. I think we would have been on our 19th year of that, and that takes place in April, and that's a live in-person event, and normally we net about $10,000. You know, a lot of the what I'm reading tells us that we probably won't, you know, realistically go back to live events maybe till, you know, the end of 2021 or at the earliest, maybe, you know, January, February of 2022. So, you know, we're probably looking at another, at least through this school year, not having any more live events. So, you know, that's some of the things that, you know, that's kind of come out.
Zoom a few minutes ago, and
do that. So we our industry partners are very important to us because they're the ones that invest the money in the annual state conference and the exhibit halls and the sponsorships and all those types of things. And we just felt that, you know, coming out of the shoot, we know we're probably not going to get as many attendees. Our average attendance at our annual state conference is about 575 school attendees that come to this conference. So we knew we weren't going to get I believe it's 975 or 1125 for a booth for a conference for a 2-day event. So we just felt that wasn't fair to anybody. So we actually held a happy hour with our industry members, and you know we just said, hey, you know, this is new for us. We know it's new for you. this is the ideas that we've got. You know, we're just going to do a probably 3-quarter day live conference. Said, hey, we don't have the money. Superior governing boards to ask for monies for we charge them $150, and that would be for, you know, all of their school members from that district could attend. And then it went all the way up to what we called a mega district, and that were school districts that had 35 plus schools, and that was $675. So I kind of equate that when I was working in child nutrition for Mesa Public Schools, you know, we had, you know, a lot of employees. We had 76 sites. Under $10 per person to participate. So we thought that that was a fair amount. The other thing that we offered to industry was that, well, we're not going to have our normal tons of education, live sessions and stuff. What about if you all do an industry panel and explain to our school members, what are some of the challenges that you're finding now with COVID? You know, what's happening? So we, for our panel, we had three manufacturer representatives. We had one food broker, local food broker. Operations in terms of how it affected them, you know, making product, and also how did it affect the delivery of product. So it gave a better understanding to our school attendees. What were some of the challenges that they were going through and why they couldn't get the product when they ordered something. So that turned out to be a big buy-in also from our industry people. So that really helped us.
Very cool. And so you mentioned that you had kind of that little virtual cocktail hour with your industry members and that you talked with Gary about how to, you know, do that kind of YouTube, I guess, kind of exhibit hall, if you will. How excited were your members to participate in that industry portion of the conference?
Well, I think it was at the time, you know, they thought it would be a good idea. But they said, you know, we really can't invest the time that we normally invest in a live in-person conference. And staff, and you know, not knowing from day to day how we're going to serve kids, whether it's going to be curbside or you know, those different options, we really don't think that we can commit to that. So the committee said, well, what about if we left the exhibit hall open a longer period of time? Live in-person exhibit hall. This year, developer. You know, he's a small barn drawing, you would have them, when they enter the drawing, going to put down all their information, back information. Now, we also supplied all our industry people with the attendees, all those other people that came in within the district that looked at those things. So we put the onus back on industry to be able to, for them to track it that way, to offer drawings and things like that to more or less entice people to come into their and look at their booth. So that's how we worked around it.
Craig, I got a question, and the question is this. I talked with you all some about doing a breakout session, and we were blessed to be able to offer a couple of breakout sessions. Track. You know, people have their little book. And I would sign their book, breakout session, or the keynote. Did you do that for the?
Again, we kind of went back to our school directors, district directors, and we asked them, you know, how for the bulk of districts, this is how they got their professional standards for the year. Said, well, yeah. And as you mentioned, Bart, we used to do it via program book. Directors, a tracking form for us to do that. And we'll just do it manually and then scan it in. So that's pretty much spreadsheet with CEUs. We had our certification chair go ahead and verify all the units and everything. And then we just put together a master CEU form, pretty much like we used to have in the program book. And then we put it back on the district directors for them to track their own. So in terms of how they're doing that, I've really not followed up with them to do that, but probably be pretty simple to do. You know, just put that in a program to be able to track that for the individual districts and their employees.
Well, one other kind of follow-up is, I know that since we were first in Arizona to do it, I know that you've and you're involved in the association of several other states with executive directors. What are
We did our conference in September, and I think California was the next on board, and they had theirs, I believe it was two weekends ago. And what California did, and my counterpart in California is a lady by the name of Janine. And what she did is they developed a platform, and I believe it's her nephew. It's actually their web person, and he developed a platform that had a lot more bells and whistles than what we did. And with that, they actually had a tracking, electronic tracking within that, so that, you know, as you went to the things, you did your own tracking. So you had, each individual had a tracking form. In terms of the evolution of a virtual conference, at least within our association, and what Janine did, because at our meeting back in August with all the other states, you know, they were saying, well, gosh, you know, we don't know, we're going to be losing all this money. Is there some way that, you know, maybe we could tag on to your event? And it at that point, it was August, ours is in September, and it was too close to our event for me to respond and offer others to come in and get. And in terms of, you know, as a speaker, you would have to get their permission to use their materials. But I think we're going to find that we'll be able to kind of, they won't have to re-record things and like that. So that's how I think the evolutions kind of go until we get back to live in-person events.
Specific platforms that you utilize to really pull this all off?
Well, good question, Wes. Researching it, I found that, wow, there's a lot of companies out there that'll put on a virtual conference for you, but it costs a lot of money. You know, on the low end, it was about, the minimum was about $5,000. And I think the most expensive one that I found was over $30,000 for them to develop this, you know, virtual conference for you. So we thought, you know, we just can't afford that. And so I think that as you move forward, I'm hoping probably the companies are going to kind of come down on that. You know, I certainly am willing to help any state association to do it and explain how we did it. Ours was, again, pretty low-key in terms of some of the software and things that we utilized. We, of course, use Zoom, and everybody's pretty much familiar with Zoom. The other product that we used was a product called Screencast-O-Matic, and that is online capturing. It's, I think it was like $30 for a year to do it. And what it does is it allows you to capture your screen. I know TechSmith has a product called Camtasia, but it's mm-hmm. that you can speak better than that. I can't remember what that costs, but I know it's a little more. But the
about cool thing about bucks.
How much?
It's about $100.
$100. Well, still that's not very much. So,
no, but and it's very powerful.
Very powerful. And the thing about Screencast-O-Matic that, you know, when we went out and asked our members and people that don't speak professionally, they said, oh gosh, I don't know if I could speak in front of a camera. And we said, well, the cool thing with Screencast-O-Matic, and you can also do with Camtasia, is that you don't have to have your face up on this call. You can just outline by PowerPoint. You can just, you know, launch your PowerPoint presentation and just outline just the PowerPoint so that you don't have to be there talking. You're in the background talking. So that kind of squashed saying, oh yeah, I can do that. So that's kind of how we did some of our programs and some of our education sessions, we have people use that Screencast-O-Matic. So we just purchased it. Some of our school people said, well, you know, I don't know that we can really commit to that much on a Saturday. Is there any way that you could record it? And we'll still sign on. So we said, we had the other thing we had to do was with our Zoom software, we were at the lowest level and you can only have 100 participants. We thought, well, you know, we're probably going to get more than 100 when we figure our school. Level up. So, and then the third thing the fourth thing we did with Zoom was that we added we increased the cloud storage space function of Zoom. We knew we were going to record for 6 hours, and at the free version that wouldn't have been able to store that. So we went ahead and did that. But, you know, out of pocket, and I was thinking about that last night, we only spent about $500 on all the additional software things that we had to purchase for our conference. And now that we have them, you know, we'll be able to use them for our other conferences as we move forward. And most of those are yearly, but still, that's a small investment.
Mm-hmm. You can also find Craig. comfortable, I think, in doing the things that we're having to do now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Good point.
Over again and change anything or do anything differently, the second time around?
Well, you know, I think that the two things that we would probably do for sure, as I think about it, number one would be we offered the Day of the Life event, we offered commercial space, and we charged a premium for that. And we were actually slotted in for four, we only sold two. But the part that I think we probably could have captured some more money that you might think about is that if you have recorded educational sessions, there'd be no reason that you couldn't also sell a sponsorship, not only a sponsorship, but a slot for a potential industry person to do a 2-3 minute video commercial that you then can embed in those education breakouts. So every time somebody comes in and watches an education session, you know, they'll see a short commercial. And then the second thing that we didn't do that we always do at our conferences is that we usually have a silent auction where we earn monies. And so we didn't do that. And I learned about a month ago when I was speaking to Jody McKinney, who's the State Association Executive in Colorado. And they just recently had their School Nutrition Industry Conference. And they contracted with a company, and it was called Auction 32, I believe. But they actually did a online virtual silent auction. So that would probably be the second thing that I would do. And that's something that we're going to do in April when we do our virtual SNIC conference. November. Because there were so many districts that normally participate that said, you know, we are just sorry, we cannot go to our governing boards, we cannot go to our superintendency and ask for money when we're not bringing in any money. So I think that the dust is kind of settled now in terms of child nutrition. I mean, it still changes daily, but with the things coming down from USDA, extensions of programs and things like that, they would have felt a little more comfortable now if we would have done it in November. And we probably would have had a little better participation. I said we have normally 500 plus people at a live conference. This year we had, I think it was 108 school attendees that actually did the live event for us. And we had about, I think it was 24 school districts. And normally we get in the high 40s to the low 50s in terms of school districts participating. So those are probably the things that I change if I had to do it all over again.
Encouragement to folks during these times as we kind of wrap up our show today?
You know, great question, Wes. I thought a little bit about now that I'm not in the district day in and day out, I thought, well, if I was there, what would I be doing? I think probably the number one thing would be to, you know, always instill faith in your people and not fear in trying. Important factor. I know some people did lose some people over the summer and things, but I know a lot of districts weren't able to, you know, keep things going the summer too. So, you know, that's kind of the number one of the things. Second thing, you know, I think I would tell directors and supervisors and managers, and I'm sure Bart, you can concur with this, you know, as we go around the country and, you know, over the past 10 years doing the speaking things that we've done, I'm just see them for breakfast, they see them for lunch. Some of them have after school and supper programs. They see them three times a day. So they have the opportunity. And the kids that they feed. The thing probably that, and I was just thinking about this, is that, you know, when I go to meet stuff now, and the attitude of the person or what they're feeling. Important to communicate the good feelings, and if you're behind a mask, it's even more important to do that, you know, not only amongst your colleagues. Probably a third thing is you need to get comfortable with using the word, you know, flexibility, you know, and see them. It's, you know, they have to be flexible because they don't know, you know, it used to be maybe from week to week, you might get a change or two. And then it come down to maybe daily, you might get a change. And now I'm hearing, you know, it could be an hourly thing. So, you know, you've got to be flexible. It's okay to try new things. And many of them have, you know, done a great job at that. I know we've had things, and I follow some of our groups on Facebook and stuff, and they've done some phenomenal stuff, you know, to still promote their programs and to still keep active in things with the kids, even whether they're now in a hybrid situation or if it's still in-home learning and stuff like that. They're still doing the curbside things. They're still doing, I know there's some districts here that they're actually doing home deliveries. They go to house by house to make deliveries and stuff. So they're, you know, it's just phenomenal what they're doing. And it's phenomenal what they're doing, you know, working with other departments, transportation departments and buses and stuff and serving stuff through the buses and stuff. So, you know, that's kind of what you got to, you know, keep doing and moving forward.
Well, you know, I think we got to keep the profile elevated of child nutrition too. I mean, obviously we've got to keep our staff motivated. I was on a patron School Nutrition Association patron call earlier this week, and that was one of the big topics that we were talking about, is how do we keep our staff motivated? And all the things you just mentioned were very important, you know, that they were talking about. But one of the things that came out is that we have to keep the profile elevated of child nutrition, because we have, you know, we've come out of the shadows, so to speak. You know, people understand just how important child nutrition is. I think we need to keep telling our staff how vital and critical they are, but at the same time, start laying the groundwork for, like you said, this is going to pass. And when it passes, how do we grasp on to this profile that we've got across the country, that people now really truly do know that the heroes do wear hairnets? You know, they really are superheroes and what they do. And that's kind of becoming my passion, is figuring out how do we continue to maintain this energy. You know, because we're all tired now, but like you said, it'll pass. And when it does, how do we still maintain that community energy so that people know and continue to know how critical and vital child nutrition is to their community and to their kids?
Well, good question. Let me see. Well, I think probably on the outside looking in, if I was an industry member, because a lot of times you might have, you know, either a child, a son or a daughter involved in a school district. You may have a niece or a nephew, or you may have grandkids still in school. I think it's important that you keep that line of communication open, you know, with your local school board, with the superintendency of the school district. You know, send them a note about all the great things the child nutrition staff is doing to support the educational process. Because like you say, a lot of times in terms of child nutrition, we don't toot our own horn enough about all the things we do to support the educational process. And then probably the next step would be to take it a little further, would be to, you know, stay involved with your state legislatures, stay involved with your national government. You know, open those lines of communication with them, you know, about the issues, and, you know, join with SNA and their efforts with USDA and also on Capitol Hill. Arizona's been, you know, Bart, you've always gone with us since you've been with us, and I knew you were very involved when you were in Georgia, too, in the political thing. And that's something that I learned by being a national PPL chair, the importance at the state level, you know, to keep those lines of communication open with these legislators. And that's something some states do. They not only support it at the national level, but they also have, you know, their state legislative days. I know California is very active with that. And every year they go to Sacramento. We here in Arizona slid a little bit. We tried it a few years back, and we actually it's kind of funny. I'll have to share this story. We actually brought some mobile carts down. We were going to serve breakfast to all the legislators. And I thought, oh, yeah, this is going to be great. And what we ended up serving breakfast to were all the homeless, which, don't get me wrong, was great too, but the legislators just kind of rushed by us and they didn't stop. But we did make appointments later on to talk to those things. But, you know, you have to keep those lines of communications open. And it's not just important to do, you know, when there's an issue. You have to build those consistent rapport with those people. Another thing would be for industry to do would, you know, get involved too with the newspapers and the news stations and things like that. If they can, you know, build those rapport with people, you know, going out to a school or something and you know, having lunch and those types of things. And SNA has a lot of report, a lot of support on their website, how to do this, and industry can glean the information on that too. But there's no reason that industry couldn't partner with a child nutrition department at a specific district to, you know, invite a legislator in for lunch or breakfast or something like that to, you know, to keep those things running. So that would kind of be my two cents on that.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for being on the show. And Craig, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Bart, thank you for your time. And Craig, one last thing for you. We've talked quite a bit about or referenced your book, My Heroes Have Always Worn Hairnets. If people are interested in picking that book up, where could they find a little more information about you and that amazing book that you've written?
Yeah, easiest way to do it is come to my website, which is my name, Craig, C-R-A-I-G, my last name, Wydell, W-E-I-D-E-L. So it's Craig at CraigWydell.com, so they can email me. And my website is CraigWydell.com, so they can check it out there. But shoot me an email. And then also, too, if you need any state level, you know, I'd be more than happy to show you how we did it and, you know, turn you on to anything that I can help you with. I'd be more than willing to do that.
Well, we'll put all that information in the show notes for everyone, so you can just look down below and click on that and it'll take them right to you.
Thanks, Wes.
All right. Well, hey, gentlemen, y'all have a wonderful afternoon.
Hey,
for everyone out there, thank you again for tuning in. This has been another episode of Friday Food Fight. We'll see you again next week at 12 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. Have an awesome weekend. Take care.